Hey, what hasn't been sparse? The skin production. The money machine goes, here's your latest
Swagger
line of skins.
Not you mother.
Like, I know we played Liquid at Iceland. They had 30 pages of notes. We changed our comp and then they were just confused. So it's like, at a certain point, you just have to be able to play the game, right? Like, I think that's why Sentinels is the best team in the world. Like, they just play Valorant. They talk to each other. They just play the rounds out. And I don't
feel
like
it's not intuitive, right? Yeah. And it's not like, it's like starting for a test, like just memorizing shit or just understanding how the fucking.
It's like understanding versus memorization. Yeah, exactly, for sure. Yeah.
There's a tendency to push back a little bit against having to adapt that quickly, but.
After die or whatever, like it was at Iceland, right?
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah. We've got a bunch of topics to cover today, ladies and gentlemen, so thanks for joining us once again. First of all, a bunch of roster moves going on, as well as the reveal of the TSM Academy team, which features some pretty impressive names. So we'll discuss that and the implications maybe for that team and for the region, along with a whole slew of roster changes that are occurring, obviously now in the aftermath of the Challengers qualifiers for all of the regions. Following that, we'll talk a little bit about what we saw in the Nerd Street Summer Championship. Excuse me, we're going to have Vanity on as well. That's related, of course. He now with C9 Blue competed in that tournament, and spoilers, they won. So we're glad to have him back on the show and again to pick his brain about what's going on in the NA scene right now. And then we're going to be going over the VCT EU stuff. We'll bring in Tom Biz as well for that part of the show once more. Good to have him back for a second week in a row. And we're going to discuss the way that tournament ended up. Obviously, Gambit end up being the victors here. Many people would maybe expected Ascend to have been that team. Supermassive Blaze also impressing people. Maybe people wondered where Liquid ended up. What happened to them as they were fighting their way through the bracket? We'll have all that and more for you in that segment. First of all, though, let's do our around the grounds in roster changes here, because obviously there's a bunch of it going on. And this first one is probably maybe more relevant to you, Vance, because you've actually seen this guy play at LAN.
Yeah.
This was a pretty short-lived stint for Truro on this Immortals roster. This guy was, playing at a high level in the collegiate scene?
Correct.
Presumably got scouted from there or otherwise onto the Immortals roster, but this is a team that was unsuccessful in their VCT NA campaign, and they're making changes.
Very unlucky for Truro, actually, because, yes, and you can even see here, he's been playing as a Jet on the Banner when he was in the collegiate scene, but with Immortals, he's been playing different roles. Not saying necessarily that he was playing quite badly, but I think he had like a stint of like bad luck with him at the same time too, because he's looking at moving downtown Toronto. He's been having some bad ping for like a month and a half. So he didn't have like the best environment to prove himself into the Immortals roster. But I think it goes deeper than that. It's more than just Truro's performances, but onto the next person that actually joined this roster, which is Emelshin.
Right. So yeah, I don't know how the fuck I'm going to pronounce this guy's name. I didn't think too much of this, but I actually started to see, first of all, we'll talk about this player. Right? I didn't know a ton about him. He was a Counter-Strike player, though, and has been scouted by this roster. But I think the one thing that made me raise my eyebrow was that there was sort of a thread about it, or Packington responds in a thread sort of saying, hey, like, we're giving this guy a second chance. I'm like, oh, a second chance for what? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, I don't want to maybe orbit too heavily around the more dramatic portion of this, but this is a player who was actually punished by ESIC in Counter-Strike.
Yep. So basically, to give a big of a background about Emil as well, CIS CSGO player. And I think what happened basically was, I think he was playing with Team VAC or something like that. And within the matchup itself, there was actually some tech pauses, and during the tech pause, with the delay that you had from GoTV for 3 minutes and a half, they prolonged it long enough so that he could actually see the economy of his opponents and basically was able to give that information to his team, and he got caught doing that. So the ban is not from like a huge like third party ban or like match fixing or stuff like that too, but of course it is still a cheating ban for being able to see that economy with the delay. With that, this is where I assume that you have, you know, Packington, Gunba, that are very, very good in terms of doing their research, asking Riot what they had to do, if it was okay for us to, or for Immortals to bring him on. And it seems as though it's an okay thing here with Riot's side, so I'm okay with it. I think this is the reason why we're talking about these second chances. He's a guy that has, two Radiant accounts, three Radiant accounts in the CIS region, wants to join a team and prominently said himself that he wants to join a team in North America, which is why he's been playing a lot in these North American servers, playing with 100 and something ping, and also, I think, got his first day being noticed by El Diablo, because the timing of that was perfect. El Diablo just joined Envy, everybody's watching Ye's like, who the hell is this guy? He's funny as fuck. And then everybody started talking about Emil.
So this guy's been playing on the NA server.
Yes.
And dealing with, well, I mean, is there a CIS server?
There are, I guess, European servers, I guess, at that point. But
I know Shadowburn, who was an Overwatch player. He lived in fucking Siberia. Mm-hmm. And he played on the EU server, but it was a wasteland out there. And like, because of the way that like it clustered you based on your latency, it was hard to find games. So, I mean, I wonder if this guy, what part of, I mean, maybe if he lives in like the eastern part of Russia, this it maybe makes more sense. I can't imagine. No, there's like, there's no way that like the US and Russia have been able to coordinate to run undersea cable across the Bering Sea. Also one of the most rough seas in the world. So they'd be maintaining it. Hey, I'm getting
I think
off
it's low on their priority list, you know, with all of the things between Russia and the US. That's the first thing that they talk about is we need good internet. Everything else.
If I was running the show, I'd be on the phone like, yo, Vlad, homie, bro. Let's talk a little bit about ping. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'd be on that one. Okay, so I mean, good on him. Competing on NA servers is pretty hard to do. And I think he makes top 15 on the leaderboard. So yep. I don't think you need Packing and Gunbo, who are very in the source as right. talent scouts. I don't think they probably had to go too far to sort of unearth him. So yeah, I don't really care about the previous ban. Fuck, we got over the Brax thing after, you know, using that as content filler on this show for like 5-6 weeks. So, true. You know, we can give this guy a pass. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
This was a rumor, but when rumors come from people with high strike rates, like Halo of Thoughts, then you start to maybe take them a little bit more seriously. According to multiple sources, Fun Plus Phoenix, FPS, are expected to release Shadow and Dimasick. Obviously, Halo can't spell today, that's fine. Multiple sources have confirmed that this FPX team is still going to have a European roster. Because remember, we had that news that FPX were looking for a Chinese Valorant team when the fucking game's not even out in that region yet. It seems like this isn't a shift in that direction.
It sounds like it could come out in a week, according to like some celebrations and stuff that are happening in China, like the 5th of September, which is next Sunday.
You're already celebrating?
There's a setup to an event or something. I'm dragon not quite sure. Yeah, they're ready to go. They're ready to unleash China onto the world.
I mean, Ryan, they beat COVID. I'm sure they can just beat riot sanctions in China now. No worries. Yeah, all hail Tencent. Either way, on the topic of FPX, Ryan, I wanted to specifically ask you about this, and I want to ask you about Shadow and Dimasick, because FPX were a team that was expected to be. Well, they have been expected for the last couple months, and they've underachieved to be a top team in this European region. Obviously, they beat Fireflux here. This is the footage from that game, and Fireflux are a little behind the curve at this time. They're a new team, but suffice to say, they disappointed many fans, I think, with their showing here in the EMEA finals.
Yeah, and I think they've been disappointing for the whole of the year, to be honest. They've just not had that many great moments to show the potential of the team that people consider to be a top contender, at least to qualify. I think for me, the problem is for FBX is, right, Dimasick was known as one of the best Sentinel players out there, but he was playing Duelist, and that's fine, but you also have players like Zipan and Xiao that can play Duelist as well. Like, I don't really know what the plan is overall, because for FPX, if you want to be flexible, then sure, getting rid of the Breach one trick to an extent, or the Sky player with Shadow makes a lot of sense. For Dimasick, less so, because if you want a Sentinel, have the guy that you brought in to be a Sentinel player play Sentinels. I think there's an argument that you could drop Zipan as well, to be honest. I think there's a, like, it depend again. It really does depend on what FPX want as a team, because if they want everybody to be flexible and fluid and to play different agents and roles depending on the map, Zipan isn't that. Zipan was an extraordinary raise player, but everything else is pretty lackluster. I have my own theories on who I think they're going to bring in, because I know Nip.
Well, don't save it for a hit scan video. Come on, spill it.
No, I would never. I think they're eyeing up Jaddy from Nip is my guess.
Okay.
I know that people think highly of him. It wouldn't surprise me considering that Nip, you've got the two brothers that are the coaches, so maybe that's something they want to keep a European team, which specifically means that they need one European, like Swedish player, and one CIS player to account for Shadow, who's from Sweden, and Demisek, who's from
Russia. They can play in Europe stuff?
Yeah, yeah. They get lucky because Ukraine, I think, as a country, can count as both CIS and Europe. So Angel is technically a European player.
You could also count it as Russia, depending on your perspective. Yeah,
yeah. I think Riot go, it's whatever you want. You decide. Sure. We're not getting into that sort of discussion. Sure. We're not getting into those semantics. But I would imagine Demisek for Jody would be an interesting one, especially if they want a flexible player that can play anything, safe style, like for Guild, and maybe Rhyme as well, because Rhyme's done the whole sign a contract gif, and he's signed long-term to NIP, so... That's my guess. That's not a scoop. That's not based off any knowledge. That's just people know how fucking good Jaddy is, so it wouldn't surprise me if FPX won him, if they want to build off of prime CIS talent that can play in Europe. And also, Rhyme is an incredible player that can seemingly play anything that's needed. So, yeah, we'll see.
I mean, you lose to Forza in a best of three. You are making team changes. There's no doubt about it. So you're happy for them to keep Xiao and Angel then? You feel like those two players are very much the core of this team and still... still belong there.
I think you can't get rid of Shell at all. I think for Angel, you could maybe argue it for a little bit more, but he is FPX. He is the team. He is everything.
He's
about
the brain.
Whilst Doombross is the coach, it's Angel really calling the shots for the most part. Maybe those shots don't really go where they should do, but you can't get rid of a player that's the face of the organization like that. I mean, it's like getting rid of Vanity, right? It's that kind of impact that it has on your roster. So I think that it's a case of how can we change? How can we adapt? The CIS region is ripe with talent now, when back in the days of Party Pirates, it wasn't as much.
Sure.
So it doesn't surprise me that FPX are trying to min-max the teams, because I don't think you can have a breach one trick anymore, like Shadow. He can play Sky, but not to the same levels as other people. And Demisek, I feel he's been scapegoated a little bit because he's done everything the team has asked him to, and he's not a duelist for the most part, so he's been awkward there.
Yeah, his stock got tanked by having to move off of Sentinels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you still confident with Doombross at the helm of this team? I love the guy personally, but I don't know anything about him.
Yeah, he is one of the people I'm closest with. I think it's a scary step up from being an analyst to a coach, especially when you've inherited a team that is a little bit wonky.
Him with a lot of FPX's strategies anyway? More that Jonta was more of like a symbolic leader on this team?
Yeah, I think people assume that coaches, for the most part, are always the people that... call the strategies, call the ideas. Like, everybody's like Sliggy, for example. I don't think every coach is like that. I know Salah is more like man management, to do a mental and to do with how teams come in prepared, how they're feeling, where they feel weak, what they want to discuss and discourse. I know that Doombross is very good at analyzing teams, their tendencies to anti-strat them for stuff for him to work on. But a lot of the problems for FPX are in the moment. It's the mid-round calls. I think it's the calling. I think Angel, a lot of the time, has put himself in positions where he's 2 seconds ahead of everybody else, and so timings on executes are really rough. I feel like the backbone of that team can be solid, because I know that Eric and Angel get on really well. It's just about connecting that. Because you'll notice as well, when you watch FPX, they have a lot of tactical pauses. They have a tactical pause every single time they get one. Because you get 2.5 and then one more in overtime. They will use it every single time. Even if they're like 12-0 up, they will take a tactical time.
I like that. Yeah,
yeah,
like,
because it's needed. So I don't think you can really fault Doombross, where he's going into game as much as possible to give feedback and information, and then the team still loses. I don't think you can necessarily blame the coach too much for that. But that might be a bias because, you know, he's my friend. Maybe Mike's in chat as well, whether he agrees or not. Like, it's not a problem with the ideas. It's how those ideas are implemented.
Right. I mean, yeah, you disclosed it. It's fine. Happy birthday, by the way. Let's talk about Evil Genius's situation now, because they've made some key changes to their roster. Okay, so this team launches with a pretty ambitious look and mission statement. More recently, we found out that Potter will be moved to the role of head coach from a player. And now Jimmy Lin, who was previously the coach, will be the assistant coach now. And this team competes in the NSG Summer Championship. We'll talk a little bit more about that because, I mean, they are a relevant team in this tournament. And Bustio stands in with this team. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, interesting. They're still, obviously, this team has not really found what they were looking for when they launched. And if you remember the launch of this team, they were like, listen, we're making a co-ed roster. We're going to be a real force to be reckoned with. You know, mm-hmm. look out for us. We're going to show you guys that you don't need to just, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but it definitely, when I looked at like, I think it was, who was their CEO, Nicole? I'm not sure if that's her name, but when she sort of tweeted and it was like, watch us. We're going to show you.
Yeah.
We're going to show you that we can make a team that's co-ed and be a top team. And I'm like, well, I mean, okay, that's fair enough. If you can do it, but, is it still a co-ed roster, gentlemen?
Not anymore.
No,
not anymore. No. Yeah. But that's the thing, like you want to be at the top, which is a great ambitious goal as well. It's not because it's a co-ed team that they can't make it. I think it's more because the roster itself wasn't that good enough to be able to make it to the top either, right? Because we talk about, you know, Claudia, she sort of like silently left the roster. Osiris already got dropped. Yeah, that Alexander got dropped. So it's not really on individual, yes, it is individual performances, but it's them as a group that couldn't perform at the level that EG wanted. So now they're looking to rebuild in a sense that they want to be some sort of contender again. The roster is decent, in my opinion, right now. Still not the greatest to be at the top. But I do like the move of Christine moving over to head coach still, because she's had so much pressure from the community due to her performances and whatnot. But she's always had a great mind to the game, right? So I think this role is going to fit her quite well as a head coach. Having Jimmy Lin, another 1.6 legend in Counter-Strike that's going to support the team as well. And they've been doing that actually pretty decently during the Nursery Gamers tournament since they got Bustio coming in to ring for this tournament.
I mean, let's be honest as well. Like, I think Potter wouldn't have been the only RGL that doesn't frag out too hard. Not even in co-ed teams, but just in teams full stop. Like, you've got players like Bonker, you've got players like Pipsen, like... We don't know what made her such an asset to a team like that when it comes to calling, and I guess we'll never know to an extent unless. Like,
well, I mean, we've had a chance to benefit from her experience. I think seeing her on desks in Valorant in the past.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
I don't give a shit that like that they didn't, you know, their roster didn't work, and I'm not suggesting that's because of its co-ed nature. I just found it interesting that the team was really their marketing hook for this team.
Which is more of a problem, it feels like, going in that headstrong with it, because I think a co-ed team can work. Yeah. I just don't know if those players in particular, not just for the women on the roster, but also like the Moon Raccoons guys were so tight a team.
Yeah.
You split that up, it's not going to be the same. You could put any other players in those two spots and you're going to see an underperformance because you've broken up a team that has got stronger together, and then you put it together like that. I think, you know, if you poach players from Cloud9 White, for example, you might be able to have much more success there. I think people are going to look at this and kind of go, it failed, it fell flat on its face because it's a co-ed team. And it didn't. It's just...
That's it.
It didn't work.
Like, that's it. That's
and let's be honest, there's so many other teams.
I mean,
that
they didn't
never
sign
work.
The Shazam. They didn't sign the Sick or the Tens of NA to be able to be a top contender. No matter who was in that roster, if it wasn't co-ed at the start, like if it was the full Moon roster Raccoon that was even signed at the beginning and be like, we're going to be a top contender, that potentially would have not happened either. Who knows? Because that team got split. But even Osiris, like after he left MMG, Mamamoo Gaming, what other team was he notable? Was he
no, and that was probably the biggest head scratcher for me. Apparently, like he was great as a solo player and like was really solid on ranked, but it seemed like there was like a very fresh helping of like marketing mixed into how this team was scouted, which is, I don't think that's necessary. Who gives a fuck if your team's not marketable? Just go up with VCT. That's marketable.
Dangerous.
You could be
though,
the blandest
really?
Cunt and people will love you if you just win in Valorant. All you have to do is win.
Because I feel if you do it from a marketing perspective, there's always a risk that you just set the scene back in that way, which is a shame considering how good Game Changers is going, just for the tournament, the resources that it's put in, and the fact that we're getting more and more women's teams forming and minorities as well, to partake in an area where they were never really allowed to. They were always shut down. So, you know, that's always the risk when you do something like Evil Geniuses did. And I think for the most part, Nice thing is the reaction to the changes has been a mostly positive one. There hasn't been a, haha, we told you, you can't do it, you're all shit, you're all bad. I think the Reddit's just kind of like, it's a step in the right direction, and it didn't fail because of whatever reason. It failed just because big teams fail now and again. Like, we've seen it with Cloud9 when it came to CS. Like, it just happens. So it's always a risk when you do this kind of thing, especially if you go in headstrong about the marketability of having a co-ed team.
So that was just a bit of a thonker for me. Let's move on. Let's talk about, sadly, the departure of quite a storied roster, even though there was only a short stint for them in the Valorant scene. Man, I Love Flogs has unfortunately announced that they are disbanding fans.
Yeah, unfortunate for this team too. I think what was going on was, for the longest time, they were trying to stick as a core to try to find some sponsors, organization to represent them. You know, we have some management and players that are doing two things at once, whether it's like school and work, work and playing, or just work and playing. So they're trying to find some consistent salaries so they could continue to practice and be a top team in the VCTs. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And you had, like, even if you're looking at these names quickly, like Ellie Twitches wasn't even mentioned in there either, because players also had opportunities to trial and compete with other rosters too. So as a core, it wasn't paying off anymore. And at that time, when you don't have that sponsorship, it falls apart. I'll still support them. I'll still wear my my MILF sweater and hoodie when I go to the gym. So.
Man, I Love Frog sweater. Jesus, come on, man. Sussy.
Sorry. Man, I Love Frogs.
Man, I Love Frogs. Yeah, you have to say it like that every time.
MILF Frogs.
All right. So when one team disbands, another one tends to pop up. That's the nature of our early Valorant scene here. Team Solo Mid FTX Academy has been announced. So the next generation of Valorant talent starts here. This team featuring ZK, B-Dog, I know D-Cop there, Precision, Payne as well from Ghost Gaming previously. Yeah. Couple names I'm not too familiar with here. So another team that sort of... So we've had teams that have had Academy rosters in the past. They've disbanded them because of, you know, rules about VCT, but there's enough going on, I guess, that, you know, this TSM Academy has a reason for existing.
You have Apex in there, which I'm pretty sure, so you're looking at the full roster. It's like the ex-Noble roster joining this right now as the Academy team. I don't think it's a bad move. I think the players are still aware, no matter what, that, you know, because of that, they can't compete in the VCTs, but the branding in itself, to just have TSM on their backs or to be able to wear that proudly on their jerseys is good enough. And I think it's the same thing. Like,
they're probably getting paid Vans as well.
Exactly. Which is very similar to, like, let's say T1 Academy, where Dawn had an opportunity to play with T1, right? So maybe it's going to be one of those moments where, okay, well, what's happening with TSM so far? Is there players we could actually start rotating in as well as that fifth player, fourth player, or just all out replace what are we currently have with the TSM Academy team? So it's a good move, I believe, for these players to get paid, for sure. And then you go from there. What happens after to the Academy team, the main team, etc.?
I think if you look at the current TSM roster and how new scouting has been done for that team, it's pretty clear to see that there's a realization that, hey, you know, we need to think about investing in sort of, you know, younger players, and maybe that these mainstays of, like, the early, you know, the first strike era of Valorant, maybe these guys just aren't going to be enough to propel this organization into, like, a franchising era if that happens down the track in 1 or 2 years.
Yeah. I was going to mention that too. Like, if eventually gets into a franchising very similar to, like, League of Legends, where they have the Academy section as well for League of Legends, then who knows? Maybe you have the T1 Academy, the TSM Academy that could start competing in that ecosystem too. So are we looking at potentially building what's going to happen in a year, 2 years? Is this the direction that the game, the esports, is going to head towards to franchising? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm fine with it. I think last time we sort of talked about this, it was in T1's case, and, you know, I don't think we overlooked the fact that, you know, Knights and NSG are, you know, doing a lot of tournaments, whether it's weekly or monthly, but at the time it felt less pertinent. I think, you know, for TSM, right, the price pool of those events is not really an issue, all the price pool being low, right? I think they're happy to be able to field.
They're never going to enter those tournaments.
Yeah. And they, especially they can't. There was maybe a period of time where, like, when TSM was struggling to get, I don't really know what, like, I don't know, if you like win something in January, does that mean all the way through the year you couldn't end up competing in those lower tier stuff? Or like if you end up sort of struggling as a roster in June, then you can go back and actually compete in those? Like, I'm not really sure how the rules work for sort of going back and playing in tier two stuff if you're a tier one team who's struggling at that level.
No one ever told us yet. We have never had clarifications. I think isn't FaZe like still having an issue playing it and wanting to play in tier two events? And it's been like since Masters 1?
Yeah, I mean, because they compete, they were in the NA finals for, or NA playoffs, excuse me, for BCT. So, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Anyway, let's crack on. Maybe one day we'll actually get a straight answer on that one. But for now, we'll move on and jump to the part of the show where we get to talk about both a new roster and a tournament that just went down on the weekend as NA is still recovering from the BCT playoffs so far. For the second time, I want to welcome back to the show the one and only, the newest addition to Cloud Nine Blue. It's Vanity.
Hello.
What's going on, homie? How you doing?
How are you?
Not too shabby, man. Thanks for joining us, dude. Obviously, busy times for you. You were obviously being sort of teased or rumored to Cloud Nine sort of maybe like a week or so beforehand. You kept a straight face on that one, so well done. Congrats on the pickup, man. Tell us a little bit about sort of the first days with this team, because you've already been competing, so you hit the ground running.
Kind of similar to where we left off on Chaos, I think. I think just the way that me, Leaf, and Zeppa kind of, because like I was, I guess me and Steel were the first like pro IGLs they played with, right? So I think that we kind of see the game the same way, and I think that not much has really changed in the period of port.
Awesome. Yeah, so does it feel like there's some of that structure that was there, or that framework that was there on Chaos? Or is it like a different feel?
It's definitely different. It's not the same, because obviously we're playing a different game. But I think like a lot of it does like kind of go over, I guess. Like, I don't know the right way to describe it. But like, yeah, it definitely feels like there's just like still naturally like chemistry there, because we understand how the others like to play. Like us three. And then obviously like Leaf has been playing with Mitch and Zeta since he switched in like the end of December or something, and then Eric's been playing with him for a few months now, so those four like get each other, and then me, Leaf, and Zeppa obviously all have the, it feels like, natural chemistry at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to ask, actually, Vanity. First off, thank you so much for the host and a rate as we have your community on the show. But to continue on with what you're mentioning, having now Zeta and Mitch, how has that been playing with those two players? Has it been like because you already have the core that you have with being able to join your teammates again from Chaos. But how's it like for like Zeta being like that player coming in from Korea, the adaptation from there?
I definitely think it's been different, because I think they never really had like a leader before. And I think they kind of just, Mitch was IGLing, but I don't think it was like what you'd imagine, right? Like, I think there was a lot more of like a vocal minority. Like, they were all talking a lot. And I think more so with me, it's like when rounds get to the end, like I'll just say something and we do it, and like it sounds like I'm confident in like what I'm saying. So I think it's a lot different, like going into like ending rounds like that versus like four people giving ideas and then someone's like, okay, let's do this, where it's like they're not completely sure in what they're saying. And I think that's probably like the biggest difference we've had, because I was watching them play the qualifier leading up to this, and that's kind of what it was like, the NSG thing. I watched them play it, and it was like, that's kind of like, there was like an uncertainty within it. But I think that's just because like none of them necessarily have like the confidence to be wrong, I guess. Like, I don't know, like, no, the right way to describe it. It's just like the leader of men, I guess, right?
Yeah. No, I get at the same time too, because when we're looking at, you know, Mitch IGLing at some point for Cloud9, they also had like a revamp in composition too, where, you know, Mitch was starting to call as a smoker at the same time as Astra, trying to implement that into the roster. And I think maybe that could have been too much when he's used to playing like a Sentinel or used to playing a Killjoy. So what I like right now from how you've worked this team out for Cloud9 is that it seems as though you're going back into roles where everybody's just comfortable playing that for the longest time, right? Mitch is playing a little bit more Sage, going back to a little bit more Killjoy.
Yeah.
So there's that as well. Then I think we already see that system implementing in terms of like the comfort of the roster. So congrats on that so far. I'm liking what I see from Cloud9. So Ryan, I think you had something here.
Yeah, because obviously, with all of these players being in chaos, at least for the most part on the roster, obviously you don't have the full like infinity gauntlet of players, but was that like a thing that you really were leaning towards when you came into Valorant, of just, if there's an opportunity for me to play with the guys that I played CS with, that's what I want to naturally lead towards? Or was it just that mixed with
working
with Cloud9 and stuff? So like, I guess that was probably the big turning point for you, right? Is just, I have a chance to play with the guys I used to play with. I don't want to pass up on that.
Yeah, no, I think that was most of it. I think like even on like version one, I was like, if I get a chance to play with Leaf and Zeppa, I'm going to try to pursue it. Like I told them that back like when the team started, right? Because like they knew, I don't know, it's like we ended on such like a, at a weird point, right? Like it was a high, but it also was like we're playing people that were just clearly like we're a decent amount better than, and we never got to compete against like international competition or like even like good teams consistently. Like, cause towards the end we were like, I guess we beat EG, but like we never got to play against like the upper echelon of like the world. Like we only competed against the American teams. We beat every team in America at least once last year. I think we had positive records against most of them other than Liquid. That was the only one who like had our number. It's just like, we never got to see how good we could have been. And I think that's kind of what led me to wanting to reunite. Cause I think that like,
it was unfinished business.
Yeah, yeah. Like I just, I guess like regret, right? Like maybe I'll have the same thing with version one, but I think that we left chaos on such like a high that I want to see if we can accomplish what I think we're capable of.
Yeah.
And also just being able to do that into another team as well. Like I think a lot of people were amped to see the power players play again in Valorant. You know, it's the, how will these guys do? I mean, obviously, naturally, I think you'll do better than the iBuyPower guys, but like, it's still exciting to sort of see that go into a new game, right?
Yeah, no, so for sure.
All those Chaos fans can support you guys going into it as well, which I'm sure Cloud9 would love as well.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, because I think, I forgot which tournament it was as well, though, Vanity and CSGO, but like you guys were taking like a lot of these top North American teams in like overtimes at some point, too, where like, maybe a couple of months before, it was just like, okay, well, who's Chaos? It's like Chaos always with along the lines of like Triumph or into like the tier two scene.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're looking at, you know, I don't know if it was Summit, or not.
Summit's the one where we tied like every team in our group or something.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. So then I was like, oh shit, there's potential there. Then boom, like unfortunately that happens. And, you know, at least you guys have that opportunity in Valorant. But speaking about players that have opportunities in Valorant, I know I'm going to put you in a toss spot here because I'm doing my Reddit detective thing at the same time because I've been having fun just like tweeting out and like trying to squeeze it out of MC at the same time too, because he got let go from Gen G most recently. He just went on another podcast recently with Press 4 for Defuse and is wearing a fucking Cloud9 t-shirt. So I was like, yo, stop playing with me. When is this going to get announced?
I think he said he ordered that. And then I think they delayed the podcast because the shirt didn't get there. Oh, they were supposed to do it the week prior or something. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to work with Matt again, but I think what we have right now is working. So obviously, I don't think it's worth changing.
Awesome.
Hey, let's go in and talk a little bit about your run in the Nerd Street Summer Championship, because obviously you watched the team qualify from afar. You hinted that you felt like there was maybe a little bit of uncertainty there. So can you talk me through like what your goal is, obviously outside of playing with some of those ex-teammates, what your goal is when you sort of come into this team and how you want to try and get the best head start, because you obviously join this team and then you end up playing in the finals. So what's the mindset like coming in to this tournament and how you're trying to, I guess, get the most out of your teammates, some who you know, some who you don't know as much?
I think I don't know, like I don't really ever go into like tournaments with expectations. I think that's weird to say, but like, especially with such little like practice time, I think we had 2 days with this roster with these roles, so it's like I wasn't really expecting much. Like there were some okay teams in the tournament, I think Energy, Immortals, I don't remember who else was in there, EG, Ghost, like there was teams. But like even with little practice, like I thought we could win. It's just like kind of depending on how confident we were in the new roles that we had, because obviously Leaf has barely played Jet, and then Zeppa was like the Jet player, but like doesn't really fit him as like a player, I think. So we just kind of swapped him around like the flex, like second duelist role. I think things kind of flowed more naturally in matches than they were. Like our scrims showed really well, actually. Like the four scrims we had, I think, or like whatever. I think we single digit like every team we played. I think they got less than 10, like 5 rounds on like 4 maps or something, like multiple teams. It was weird. But I mean, we didn't really know if it was going to translate to the tournament. I think it went okay. Obviously, we have some issues with our map pool, but that's a given. We've been playing for, like, I think we have, like, 5 days, 6 days together now at this point, even with the tournament. So, I mean, I think we have a good start, but hopefully we can continue to build on it and have some success going into the LCQ.
I only bring it up because we just talked about him. You guys did play against TSM's Academy team in the group stages of the NSG tournament. What do you think about them? How do they look to you guys? Obviously, you had a pretty confident win against them, but you know, probably a few people wondering what this roster is shaping up like, at least from the players' perspective.
I don't know. I think it's interesting to like limit. I guess it's like got to be a financial thing with these Academy teams. So it's like maybe the people that, like the people I think are good enough to play professional aren't probably going to sign to these teams because you're limiting yourself, but maybe like some of like the middle, it's like a weird thing to like to accept the fact that like to join an Academy team. I don't think a lot of like the people that really believe that they can go pro would sign to most Academy teams unless, I don't know how much these teams are making, obviously, but I think just limiting like competitive potential is not something a lot of people would be willing to do unless you're getting like an incredibly high salary.
And you're definitely referring to the fact that they can't compete in VCT.
Yeah,
right?
But that's, yeah, and that's like where all the eyes are going to be on, right? Like,
yeah.
It doesn't really matter how well you're doing. I mean, obviously, doing well in these like lower tier tournaments matters, but it's like the eyes are on you when you're competing against the best teams in the region.
Yeah, it always feels like a halfway house a little bit. You know, it's like players are not going to stay there, you know, once they start to garner more attention.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's interesting from like an investment perspective.
And realistically, are they going to be good enough to bench some of the TSM players above them to take their spots, right? Because that's at the very least, having those five players might force those main TSM players to, you know, pack it up a bit and just knowing that, like, I need to be my best. I need to practice. I need to scrim. Yeah. I need to stream and to play because there's five other people dying for an opportunity to play in my spot. So I've got to, like, nut up or shut up.
I think the weirdest thing about Academy teams now is it's just like the limitation of competitive experience, right? Like in the LCS, I'm not sure anything about Overwatch, but I know in the LCS, right? Like they still have competition. They can still like, they'll still scrim against like all the pro teams. They can play. There's like another Academy league where they play the Academy teams. It's all like broadcasted. But in this, it's not necessarily the same because I don't think, it just feels different. Yeah. It's like, it's rushed, obviously, because I think when it's only, what, there's, like, two of them. I think it's only T1 and TSM right now. I've heard some other orgs are considering it, but it's, like, it feels like it's just no one really knows how it's going to go, I guess.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat as you. I think that it's still an unknown and uncertainty, especially, like, for example, next year, if for example, NSG does not win the bidding with Riot, whatever the circuit's going to be for next year, too. Do they still want to do any Valorant tournament, or is it just going to be a cause for nothing, right? And therefore, those Nursery Gamers Monthly or whatnot would not exist anymore, too.
I think they will do it, because they just want to get users on their platform, Vance.
I think NSG is not more so worried about being the main platform. I think they're more so worried about being, like, a grassroots thing. That's been their entire thing, like, in North America, at least. Like, maybe the goals have changed, but their entire, like, existence, right, since Fragadelphia, all of that. True. It's, like, it's just about building the grassroots in America, like, the American scene.
It just so happened that they became like one of the best TOs in NA for like VCT stuff, but like that was more, I wouldn't say it's accidental, but
I feel like a lot of that comes down to like maybe TOs just don't want to get into it because they know that if franchising comes in, maybe they're just not like in it anymore, right? So that could be some of it, like some of like the higher tier like TOs, like Esports Engine, right, is like the old MLG people. Maybe they don't want to get into it because of something like that. Like I have no clue, right? But it's like maybe ESL, like IEA or the same company, but like it could be something like that.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, they're obviously different companies, but the issue is, we talk about this pretty often. It's like Riot stipulates sometimes like what categories you can advertise in for sponsors. So like you can't have an energy drink sponsor, for example, if you're running VCT, and also you pay to run the event. So for NSG, it makes sense because their business model gets more people on the platform. That's all they want to do. They don't care if it costs $10,000 to run VCT. Yeah. So I'm interested to see how that sort of plays out next year, but I don't see them going away.
I'd be very surprised to see them stop. Like, maybe they won't be as frequent, but I would be very surprised to see NSG not running tournaments throughout all of 2022 also.
Especially if they're already running Fragadelphia for now working in partnership with Blast for something like that as well.
It seems like they're
really good for grassroots stuff. Yeah,
seems like they
have NBC connections as well.
They have a lot of, they're pretty well connected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much. I mean, did you have a question, Vance? Otherwise,
no. I was just gonna say, yeah. Like, we could continue on with talking about the NSG run that Cloud9 has had and just run over like the round of 16, because you know you guys played against Ukers for me in that matchup. Ukers for me, I won't ask too much about it. I think this is more like a pug thing that's going on soon, because Stellar is still under contract, I think, with LG, playing with Mochilla, with Mina. So I guess it was
from
just
Equinox, right? Stellar
exactly.
From LG.
Yeah. So it was a close game here on Breeze, but I think everything else was literally a breeze. No pun intended. Well, yeah, it was a pun intended for Cloud9. So I actually want to.
I want to throw myself out of the window now. Give me
I just want to take the advantage to end here, Vanity, just to ask a question that we had from chat from Tika Lal. He's been asking, like, what's the coaching style differences that you've experienced so far between, I know it's been short, but the stint between IMI with version 1 and now with Autumn from Korea with Cloud9?
I think we have two. I mean, they're pretty much, like, similar. Like, James and Autumn are pretty equal. Like, James is the assistant, but I think they're pretty much equals on the team, and we see them as equals. So I think it's comparing both of them to IMI. I think, I don't know. I think we're so, like, it feels pretty similar early on into the team, like how IMI was at the beginning, but I think I don't really know, honestly. Like, it's so early, it's hard to judge. Like, yeah. I think IMI tried to do as much as he could, and that seems, that's like the same thing they're doing right now, right?
Yeah.
So it's like they're pretty similar. Like, they bring stuff to practice, they like talk about stuff with me, they send me notes. So I think they're pretty similar. Like, I guess the biggest difference is we have two now instead of one, like one set of eyes. I don't really think there's much of a difference, though. No.
Okay.
I feel like James he's got a good background in I don't know if it's sports science or psych, but I interviewed him for Cloud9 once before, and the guy was, in terms of like the philosophy of coaching and stuff,
he's like a biomechanical engineer or something. He was.
Yeah.
So I don't think he has any. Yeah. I don't think he might just be interested in it, but his degree was definitely in like biomech or something.
Gotcha.
It was a science, yeah, something no. science related.
But at least I felt like, you know, he wasn't someone trying to fucking, you know, you do run into some coaches, they're just like,
they're there,
I don't know what it means.
Yeah, just
to be
there. Yeah. They're there to like show you strats and stuff, and they're not like, yeah.
And they're just like, it's just the title, and like they don't actually know how to manage people or like to get the best out of people at all. And you can spot them from a mile off. And let's talk about this Immortals game. So you play them in the round of eight, right? This Immortals roster with the Azerbaijani fucking Emil Shine on the roster. Yeah, okay. Playing on fucking... he's literally from Azerbaijan. I'm not even making that up. So what do you make of this this IMT roster? Obviously, like, they're in a spot, I guess, similar to you with, like, a new addition, but you guys have probably a lot more pre-existing chemistry here, and we definitely get to see you leverage that over two maps.
I don't know. I don't think either of the maps... I feel like they're in the same spot that a lot of NA teams are in right now, where they don't have an IGL and they kind of just bounce it around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even like necessarily like, I think it's just like, there's not, it's the same thing at North American Counter-Strike ran into, right? It's like the lack of like people that just want to do it. Like, you don't have to be good at it. It's like, make it seem like you want to do it. And it's a lot easier for people to buy into like what you're saying. But I think that also stems from like a lack of like confidence in people, I guess. Like, they just don't really believe in like what they're saying, right? So like, in like high pressure situations, I think that's where like teams that crumble, teams that have that kind of style crumble the most, is like high pressure. Because like, dude, like the amount of rounds we played against teams in our like run to Iceland and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
you could just tell like they don't have an IGL because they just hesitate. They just sit there and nothing happens. And I think that comes down to like just not having like someone that's just completely confident in what they're saying. Like, I don't believe in what I'm saying most of the time. I just say it because I have to sound like I believe in it.
Yeah,
it works.
Don't you reckon though, like, if you're prepped, like, do you reckon if you're prepped, it's easy to believe in what you're saying? Like, obviously, it's almost like it's a fake it till you make it thing, because you've got four other people whose confidence depends on how much they believe you know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
but don't you feel like that? Like, the more prep you do, the easier it is to walk in and actually have some degree of confidence, or is that never really there? And, you know, like, a game can always just play out differently to how you draw it up.
I think it depends on the like the styles of the teams and like the IGLs and stuff. Like, I've never been super prep heavy. Like, ever. Yeah. Like, I tried the anti-strat early into my Counter-Strike career, and I didn't really think it was, like, super good. I guess I don't share it with my teammates unless it's, like, something they need to know, because I think people get into their own heads about it really hard. Yeah. So I think it's more so something, like, if it's, like, glaring and, like, 100% we need to know this, I'll let them know. But for the most part, I just try to keep it all to my, like, most of it to myself, because I think I do a relatively, like, I have a
really good memory for some reason. Like, I remember the most obscure facts, so I think that is beneficial for me. But I think a lot of people, it can hinder them when you, like, go too deep in anti-chatting. Like, I know we played Liquid at Iceland. They had 30 pages of notes. We changed our comp, and then they were just confused. So it's like, at a certain point, you just have to be able to play the game, right? Like, I think that's why Sentinels is the best team in the world. Like, they just play Valorant. They talk to each other. They just play the rounds out. I don't
feels
think
like it's like, intuitive, right? Yeah. And it's not like, it's like studying for a fucking test, like just memorizing shit or just understanding how the fucking...
It's like understanding versus memorization. Yeah, exactly, for sure. Yeah.
It's like that intrinsic understanding of a concept. Why do you reckon it's so hard to find like good IGLs in NA? Do you think like is it just because the leadership qualities is just not something that like are like inherent in like a lot of sort of pro players, or like why do you sort of feel like there's so many people that maybe don't want to step up, or is it because people are afraid of it sort of hurting their performance?
I think it's not even the performance thing. I think it's like people are just, I feel like imposter syndrome is really prevalent within like the pro esports scene. I mean, it's probably relevant in pretty much every like professional like pathway you're in, right? And I think that like just having the confidence to be like, okay, this is on me. I don't think people want to take blame. I think that's the biggest thing. I don't think people like to like just completely just take the blame. Like, even if it's not my fault, dude, it's my bad, guys. All good. Go next.
Yeah, sure.
But it's like, I don't think people, a lot of people like that. And then I don't know. Like, I really can't tell you because I wasn't in IGL when I first started playing, but I was like, well, this is probably the only way I'm going to go pro, so I might as well like at least like try it, and then obviously it's turned out pretty well. But I think the biggest thing is people just don't like taking blame, or like they want to just...
Which is, by the way, a leadership quality. that is one of the main qualities of being a leader. So you got to take responsibility. Yeah.
That's it, and I agree with you, Vanity. I feel that it's like a mental block too for lack of IGLs right now, because at first, when we were all coming from CS and we're trying to compare both games and be like, okay, well, it's always the same smokes in CS, it's always the same timings, you kind of have an idea and limited of what you could do. But I think the more that we're playing this game right now in Valorant, and when you see maybe a change of composition, you already know like, okay, well, this is a possible synergy that this pop is going to happen, right? So it might happen at different timings, but it's always the same pops. Like, you'll see the smokes at the same spot, very similar to CS at the same time too. So it comes down to like, it's not a lack of learning abilities and stuff like that as well, and how these teams play. But I do believe it's probably a mental game at the same point for an IGL.
We talk about this EG matchup, because did they pick Split against you guys?
No, we picked Split. I mean, this,
you picked Split against them.
I think we put that map. I don't even know if we ever streamed that map actually. We just want to, I mean,
well,
we're
basically
like,
you're screwing.
Like, we're, yeah, I mean, this tournament was completely for practice. Like, yeah, we wanted to win,
you're
but like,
hugging it.
We haven't played anything really. Like, I think the only main maps we streamed were like Icebox and Haven, I think, were the main two. But yeah, we just picked the map to just get some, because we haven't played it yet the entire tournament, so we're like, might as well play it.
And it showed.
No blinds.
I was gonna say that it showed that it was in practice, but I think it's more like, knowing how you were calling it for version one before, having like Zelsus on a Killjoy doing the Viper meta, we didn't see any of that going into this roster either. You're going with a double duelist for more explosion with no flashes. I think it was just more like trying to figure out that synergy and getting the
don't try and make
together,
it academic,
right?
So, Van Sassy, mate, you know, it's just not that complicated apparently.
Yeah, yeah. It's just we were just playing, and I liked it.
I think. I don't know. We probably would have won that map, but I actually had like the unluckiest map of Valorant I've ever played in my entire life. Like, literally, I've never died in ways that I died this map. It is what it is, though. It's like unlucky.
What do you take from Boostio, though? Because he definitely got, you know, a lot of praise, including myself giving Boostio a lot of praise. Still, I'm still wondering why he's not being picked by a team so far. Do you see something different than me that there's reasons why he's not being picked, or is he overlooked? Is he underrated? What's going on with...
I think he's pretty good. I just don't think he's, like... He's good, but I just don't know if he's, like, special enough to, like, replace, like, an upper echelon team's, like, duelist player, right? Like, he's definitely a good duelist, but it's, like, is he better than... I don't even know how far you, like... I also have never played with him on a team, right? Like, it's hard to say, right? Like, from when playing him, he's definitely has a lot of impact, but... I don't think he's much more impactful than the other duelists we play on, like, other teams, right? Like, it's not a notable difference where you would want to replace someone and, like, under the chemistry between the teammates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all of those Jett players that are worth picking up are probably, like, unearthed at this point, so you're not going to hear them straight away. One thing you mentioned about the map pulls, It's likely to get worse because by the time that you play Last Chance Qualifier, it's at least looking like we're going to have 7 maps in the game. So I was curious because it's all been teased and stuff. That's not a Wyatt Rivers leak there. But what I will say is, what kind of map would you like to see? Because I think a lot of CS players want to see something Ascent because it's very cash-esque. But what about you? Are you a fan of like the, not so much the breezes and the binds, because I know how you feel about bind, but like, need do you want to just see something? I was going to say, would you want to see an overpass at this point? So or an inferno?
Because I think bringing in like, I don't know, like, I guess I don't know if like elevations would work in this, like a nuke. I don't know if that would work, but it'd be cool. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't really think it would really work in this game that well.
There'd
I don't
be
know.
Some weird shit, yeah. Wouldn't it? Be
I think
some,
something
like,
similar. I think something slide. Similar to overpass would be like a cool. Obviously, you'd have to scale it and it'd be completely different. Yeah. But like a similar layout, like a really like big like area, like open area, like towards the A, and then like a more compact towards B. But I think with like a rotating connector in the middle, I think pretty good design. It could work in this game. Maybe it doesn't. I think it'd be pretty cool to see though. I'm not really. I like pretty much every map in this game. Even bind. I don't know. I'm starting to think Ascent might be worse, dude. Odin is just so stupid.
So it's more gun nerfs than the map that we want as well for more balancing on these maps. Because I love Bind, but I think it's being.
I think it's just. I think Bind's meta's. That's like the only map that I feel like the meta hasn't really shifted on much.
Yeah.
But I think that's because of the map design. I don't think it's like. It's just like. I think it's the
feels
one
like
map.
It feels like a 2CP map in Overwatch in Valorant. I think sometimes Bind's.
Yeah.
Like your executes have to be pristine just to break through, otherwise you're screwed.
Verticality, I think, is going to be not well perceived by the community so far in the maps, because when Icebox first came out,
people didn't like Icebox. Yeah,
exactly.
That was the knee jerk, though. But then a lot of people start turning around going, actually, I kind of like Icebox. And then we've gone back to fuck Icebox.
So. Now it's like, now it's like a main map after you get used to it, right? So I think you always have to let the dust settle for a bit.
I feel like people are always going to be like fast to react about a map.
Exactly. Like, on drastic changes.
Yeah. Nothing's going to be like rational. It's just all like, I don't like this map. It looks different.
How important do you think that's going to be going into Last Chance Qualifier? Is just being proficient at a 7th map? Because obviously, if you don't like it, you have to ban it, and then you lose another slot of banning something else, right? So let's say for, I don't know what the bans would be typically, but let's say like Cloud9 doesn't want to play bind. It's like, all right, you either get good on the 7th map, or you might need to improve your bind. It's sort of one or the other. But at the very least, we hopefully are going back to like a typical CS ban, pick, ban, what's left at the very least. So that's better than 6 maps, that's for sure. Because Jesus Christ,
stupid right now. Yeah.
I don't even understand how the veto system works right now. I kind of just tell my manager to pick one of the teams. Like, I really have no clue like how it works. So
from what I heard, there was supposed to be some sort of like special way of doing a ban system, almost like a lottery style with Riot when they were implementing 6 maps during this VCT, this circuit for stage 3.
I remember that, and it never happened.
Right? Exactly, because
the teams were going to rank the maps or something, and that's how the decider was. But like, that's just stupid, man. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
There you go.
Dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It's such a unique problem to have, and it's the problem is never going to exist after like this week or whatever it is. It's been horrible.
And Mike's their unofficial NV coach in the chat right now is saying the same thing, right? Like, you had to vote and rank the maps, and whatever was left was going to be like the bad map, whatever.
That just sounded horrible, dude.
Yeah. So at least a good part is that Riot continues to listen to the community sense, which is why like we have a weird veto system, but still better than what was proposed first off. To the pro team.
Sal's been sleeping for months just to get this map done. The Volcano's just been working out. Like, we can't be in this situation forever.
Which is next act, apparently, right? So that's like, what, in a week? 2 weeks?
Like around 2 weeks or something. Yeah.
Just in time for LCQ.
I mean, there'll be like a month before it or something. Right?
Yeah. It'll probably be
like 4 weeks, isn't it, from it going live to being in tournament. It'll cut it close, but I guess it's one of those things that pros, if they feel that the new map's cutting too close to Last Chance Qualifiers, you could just complain, and Riot would probably not do it.
I think they'll just get rid of it. Same with Breeze, right?
For Reykjavik,
I don't. This map will definitely be played.
Okay.
100%. There's no way. It's a month.
It's I was just going to say, is having the new map better and having seven maps that you can ban pick better than six maps? I think most people would take seven maps, even if it's getting used to this one. Because at the very least, you have two bans.
Yeah, you have an extra ban. It makes, I think, a big difference. And also, like, I think being able to play around that is probably pretty
I also hard. Think it'll be about a month of playtime. Like, I don't think it'll be that big of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's nothing assuming
the map isn't released and, like, it's just absolutely horrible, right? But, like, I don't think any of the maps that have been released have been that bad. I didn't play Iceland.
No, they've been decent.
I think it's just like when Breeze came out, there was still VCT going on, right? And, like, playoffs and stuff like that.
I think we
so...
just qualified for Iceland when it got released, or just right before, or it was right after?
It was around then, wasn't it? Yeah. I just mean, like, at the very least, you've got time to play it in scrims, and you're not like playing on an older patch where it's kind of irrelevant or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's enough time to at least get some like up in it, and I think that honestly, I think the team that's the best at that map will probably end up winning the qualifier. Like, no joke. Mm-hmm. It's just such a veto advantage.
Yeah. Do you think that's a problem?
No.
No, me neither. I don't mind it. I think, like, obviously, there's a tendency to push back a little bit against having to adapt that quickly, but
adapt or die or whatever. Like it was at Iceland, right?
Astra Viper,
it's gonna be a good part though, because I think at that point where, you know, if teams aren't prepared on that, it's an auto ban, but then now you could even start practicing out Breeze now.
Split, because those teams that want to ban Split and Breeze and not play them, like, might have to
fun. Teams are gonna have to actually start, like, you know, getting deeper in the map pool and practice more for sure.
Is there much to say about this final against NRG? I'm shocked, really. With that, there's like some serious quality on this roster, and they are just not clicking.
I think overrate headshotting. It's just Twitter aim. I don't know. Like, they're good players, but it's just Twitter aim. Like, they're good players, but it's like they're nothing special. No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
and they have no I think Somm could be one of the best players in NA, but I'm not sure. I think he's really, really good, but I'm not really completely sure what, like, happens. I think he's just, like, had to switch roles too much, and it makes him uncomfortable, but I think very highly of him.
You think he's just, like, shoehorned into stuff?
No, I think very highly of him, but I think people overrate just, like one-tapping aim. I think it's the most insane thing ever. It's just, like, how, like, highly people value it when it's, like, these people, like, most of them aren't even good.
Yeah, I seem like there's these fucking AIM collectives now. Have you seen this shit?
Like AIM groups, like, or whatever?
Like Yuki AIM and shit. What the fuck is this?
It's weird to me. Like,
what is this? It's like a Twitter group of people that just aim good. Like, what do you do? Like, hang out and just play Osu? Good at the game. The fuck, man?
There's so many of those, like, people. Like, I remember, like, when I read Reddit, it's like, why isn't Rah-Rah on a team? It's like, dude, he's not that good. He just fucking one-tapped.
Yeah.
There's just so many people that are, like, completely... Like, obviously, like, okay players, right? But I feel like the only, like, insane player with, like, really flashy aim is Scream, right? For the most part. Like, I can't think of any of them.
Sure.
There's probably more, but it's like...
tripped up by it as well.
Yeah.
Like, there was an issue with him and his obsession with one-tapping earlier on. Motherfucker was buying a fucking Guardian and getting shit on at some point.
He had to give it a... What did you think about the fact of some of the other teams? There wasn't many teams that were at Reykjavik that were at Berlin, and like, you've played against Liquid, you've played against like Fnatic and stuff like that. Like, was that a surprise to you, or do you think it's just these teams didn't adapt fast enough? Enough, and they got overtaken.
Ascendant Gambit are, I think, like, we were playing them with like actual training weights, like 100 FPS, like 60 ping, but those teams are different. They were way better. I think Fnatic is a decent amount better than Liquid. That's just from playing them. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, but.
I also think that comes down to having like someone who wants the IGL. I guess Yompi's doing it now. We haven't played them with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Fnatic was stronger than Liquid at Iceland. Maybe it changed after. But I do think that the teams we scrimmed were better than the teams in Iceland for sure.
Mm.
I think a lot of the Europeans said that though. Start right.
Gambit stonks. The scrim bucks are rising.
They're capped. There's no more cells in those fucking stocks.
Those guys are something else.
They literally played like they were scrimming in the final, like Red Gaur on Duelist. It's on Haven, which they permaban. It's just, I thought there was a gas leak in the studio. Honestly,
Nats guy is something else, dude. It's
Nats is a freak.
When we scrimmed them, he was just playing Astra and just walking through his smokes and killing everyone.
So, what do you think then are the chances of NA in Berlin? Then
I think they have a good chance. Like, I definitely think that NA probably sent like the most likely teams to like compete at a super high international level. But yeah. I do think people are underestimating how good. It's the same thing though, right? Like people are gonna say, "Oh, my region's better. My region's better." It's like no one really knows who's better until they play each other. I think the teams that you sent were probably some of the better teams in the region, though, for sure. I think it'll be interesting to see, right?
Yeah.
The Turkish team impressed me a lot when I was watching them. Obviously,
super massive.
Yeah, their mechanics are insane. But kind of expected, I think.
Nice.
I don't know. I do think the strongest region is definitely going to be EU and NA still. Maybe Vision Strikers will be like the. I would assume Vision Strikers will be like the team not from NA or EMEA that performs the best.
So same type of performance basically as Iceland there, where we wouldn't see, like, you know, Crew basically made it at the same time as well, but like with LatAm, Brazil come back up, or
it'd be cool to see Latin America and Brazil do well for sure. But yeah. I don't know if it's like I didn't watch like the playoffs or anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not sure, but. I mean, it's the same thing in Counter, like the same thing in CS, though. Like the Brazilian teams were really, really good in practice, and then in matches, a lot of the time it didn't translate.
Yeah.
Other than like the main team that translated was like obviously like Cold Zero and Fall and all of them, but I think like a lot of the lower tier like Brazilian teams that we practiced against were just so good in scrims. Like they would like 20-10 us, and then we would play them in matches, and they would just 5v5 save.
The good players are currently playing Rainbow Six right now, where they just won the
major. Yeah.
So that's pretty good for them.
So obviously you guys have LCQ in your sights on Cloud9 Blue. You obviously mentioned you've only got a couple maps that you've already, you know, had the time to sort of work out. So what's the timeline like for you guys? What is coming up? Do you have any more like boot camps? Do you have any more tournaments between now and
I've absolutely no clue.
At least we know the dates. At least we know the dates. Hopefully you guys get to boot camp or whatever.
And I think we're going to the complexity place.
Oh, nice.
But yeah,
they're just renting out their offices for everybody else to play in whilst they're just constantly shit in the bed.
Oh, they got to make some money from fucking Valorant.
Yeah.
Fucking spending and spending on this roster that is just. Yeah. What was it? Their latest pickup was also not exciting either.
Brock?
I mean,
Brock. Yeah,
bro. Whatever, man. Shit. All right, Vanity, thanks for joining us, man. Great to get to pick your brain a little bit on how this team's coming along, and also obviously. You guys said you were chilling a little bit for the NSG summer thing, but it was nice to get your take on there as well. Good luck with the tournaments that you may or may not know are coming up for you guys.
At least it's LAN, right? At least LCQ is LAN.
Yeah,
which is
definitely
good
exciting.
Thing.
Yeah,
so
it's a lot better. Like even when we were playing on these very average computers, LAN it was way better.
Yeah,
shout at them as well. Do more of that.
That was the most fun I've ever had. Playing new turn is the most fun I've ever had playing a match.
Yeah. Soul Castella's nightmares about
just seeing
you,
Solo just stand up after everyone else.
Oh my God, we're going there again. All right, we're going to be back out of the break, ladies and gentlemen. Again, big shout out to Vanity for joining us. Thanks for coming on the stream, man. It's great to get the chance to chat with you. And we'll be back after the break. We'll talk EMEA finals, of course, with VCT. So stick around for that on the other side of the break. See you then. And welcome back, everybody, to Valorant Team. If you just missed us before the break, we had Vanity on the show to talk about Cloud9 Blue and what's ahead for their team, as well as the state of the NA region. In a moment, we're going to be talking about how VCT EMEA playoffs went, or at least the second half of it. But first, we had a patch notes this week. Not the hugest, but definitely bears a little bit of discussion here, gentlemen. 3.04 dropped today. Obviously, the patch notes for that one, we've been hoping for a big, big patch, but nothing too much here.
Yeah.
Basically, the observing toolkit's getting built out a bunch, and it's great here that Prius and Sapphire get some credit for it. I'm impressed that Riot's capacity continue to really understand the expertise of people that want to help them. So kudos there. There's a couple of interesting changes here. So there used to be like the white dot above players' heads. That's not going to be there. Now you can see Viper ult correctly on the map, where sometimes it's really hard to see. Yeah.
Although, I still think that they need to fix the when the wall comes up or down so we could see the difference in colors if the wall is up or down by the minimap, because we don't currently see that anymore since that addition.
It was red. Wasn't it like red or green, right, when it came up?
Correct.
It was active and inactive?
No, it was like green and then like yellow yellow for like it's coming down and green when it came up, but then now it's just red and green for the team colors, but we don't know when it's actually.
So you can't tell when they're active or not. That needs to be changed. Yeah. Maybe you could just change the opacity of it.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, that would be great. But overall, I mean, they're working on it, right? So it's good to see that you know, with Prius and Sapphire working the back end, the Observer client continues to improve. Which I would assume now that come Berlin, there's going to be more changes coming in to make the viewing experience a little bit better in terms of like potential HUD changes and whatnot. I'd love to see some more, just to make sure that we get some good stuff, right? Because even the HUD right now, I feel that not being able to see the money when the main scoreboard comes up with the frags and deaths, I think is going to be something that could be useful to put that instead of like ACS, for example. You know, like who gives a fuck about ACS?
Yeah, which is not. Yeah, it's well, the problem with ACS is that it's not. I mean, it doesn't really represent anything
exactly
immediately.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it just lacks context. That's fine. That's a growing pain, I think, of esports broadcast for any game.
Yeah.
Trying to find out what statistics are intrinsically, like they mean something, right? And you can, at a glance, you can use it to interpret or make inference about a player's performance. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
well, people are going to do that anyway. It doesn't matter what you. Somebody's going to fucking like, oh, Nat's only put down 14 tripwires instead of 16. This guy's fucking washed. Like, people are going to find ways.
Yeah, absolutely. there were some bugs as well that were ironed out of the system. Yeah. There was an Omen bug where dark cover was like slightly offset from where you were trying to place it. I think.
Mm-hmm. That's fixed. That's cool. I think the coolest feature that we have in these patch notes is being able to modify the reticle of the ADS and the op now as well. But if not, it's just little bugs here and there that's just fixed. I think it was just patch notes more than anything else.
I find this mad though. We had a massive balance change for 3.0.
Yeah,
it's been 8 weeks. Like I expected something, and like I think the game's in a really good spot right now.
Yeah.
From like
you talk about the control, you talk about the initiator changes, right? The bigs and the controller.
Like KO coming in, Breach being nerfed somehow.
Are they lining it up? Are they trying to line it up with like the cadence of tournaments, right? Because you think that they'd try and get these changes in before LCQ.
Yeah, if that's the case, this would have been the prime time to put some changes in there. I just feel like. Obviously, there's like the Euro stuff that they're sitting on just because they don't have the resources right now, which sounded more ominous to me than anything else we've seen so far. Yeah. At least they told us, you know, coming from Overwatch, they'd just pretend it never happened and just kind of go quiet and then be like, oh, yeah, remember this? It's like, dude, it was 4 years ago, Jeff. Like, come on. Like, but it's.
Oh, man.
They did fix the Viper ult. That's going to change the meta for a bit, or the playstyle of
Viper. Oh, because now it gets placed on your position, not on your cursor, right?
Why have the cursor in the first place? Like, that's the confusing thing.
It had like a fucking reticle on the ground,
And then it would deploy.
I always thought it's supposed to appear around the... you don't put a reticle unless the ultimate's supposed to come from the reticle.
Yeah.
There's no indication that the Viper's ultimate was ever supposed to originate from her location.
Yeah. So remove the reticle now if it's supposed to be on her location.
What the fuck? Yeah. Especially for people like me who jump on in fucking gold and just have no idea how to use that ability now.
I think one of the things that Valorant had going for it is just how often they would do agent balance. And I don't think from a pro's perspective, from talking to them, that it was too out there. Is probably how I'd say it. Like, I don't think a lot of pros were like, they're changing the game too much that it's become a problem. Because a lot of them sort of took the challenge on the head and were like, the game's constantly adapting. We need to be on top of it or we're going to be left behind. I think this meta is quite open at the very least. Like, you can play Viper, Astra on Bind, for example, but you can also just play some other shit. You know, you can play what you're comfortable on. It's only maps like Icebox where you're a little bit more stuck to playing five set agents. Breeze, it's 4 out of 5. Like, you have to play the Sky, the Viper, the Cypher, and the Jet.
Viper wall on, especially attack side, Breeze is so
it seems
so powerful.
That's still a problem, but I understand it's not a problem that you could do slap bang in the middle of tournaments, but I expected something at the very least. I just find it a little bit odd that it's been 8 weeks now and nothing has come through. I prefer what we had before over patch 3.0 just having a shit ton of stuff in it and then not hearing anything for a while. Like, I preferred the small breadcrumbs of changes as opposed to
I think
every agent getting changed at once.
I think it'll come soon enough because we had like the break from like the 1 week break from Riot, right? Last week or 2 weeks ago. So maybe that slowed things down in terms of the timelines too. So thinking about that, plus the fact that you have to put a lot of resources into pumping out and maybe hopefully make it as balanced as possible off the release of the latest map too. It might change a little bit in terms of the timelines of what they want to do for tweaking in patch notes later on.
Okay. Obviously, while patches have been a little sparse since 3.0, what hasn't been sparse? The fucking skin production.
Fuck.
The money machine goes, here's your latest
Swagger
line of skins.
Not, you motherfucker.
Yep. Here's some, I guess this is like a military camo look.
I'm buying
here.
It. I'm buying
it. Okay, so looks pretty awesome. Obviously, it features a butterfly knife. Anybody? Yep. Also, it seems as if these tactical attachments on the weapons are randomized.
I don't fucking care. There's a butterfly knife.
Butterfly knife. Yep. Obviously, you can do the spinny thing, which is great for anyone who fidgets.
You know what? I'm logging into Valorant right now. If it's in the store, I'm buying it right now.
So here it is, the butterfly knife. Looks like a butterfly knife. Obviously, these are your different sort of skins. This doesn't feel to me like a ruined collection. But look, these are tactical attachments. I don't understand if like you get a random attachment on your weapon and that's what you have, or every time you pull it out, it's a different one, or what? I'm not sure.
Hopefully it doesn't show, right? Yeah, hopefully it's just a perk because it becomes a fucking dot. Like if you actually have a dot and like
It'll be client side, yeah.
The lens flare from the video, though, like, Zaki, calm down. Like, it's like a little, like, marketing. I know that, like, when we do these skin showings, that we are effectively extended marketing for Riot, but, like, yeah. Making you a montage.
Esports is extended marketing for developers.
Oh, then I am the biggest slut for Valorant, and, apparently. Yeah, so,
stew on that for just a second. In fact, the budgets used to be the fucking same. I used to get paid from a marketing budget, not from an esports budget. Anyway, so I'm told in chat it is randomized. So every time you pull it out, it's like a different fucking attachment. That's cool. A problem for me because I'm going to be superstitious and only want a certain attachment. I have to keep web switching to fucking get that attachment out, and then I'm just going to get shot in the face. So fair enough.
Okay, it's not in the store yet. And I'm also head bopping and cat jamming because my volume just went back up for the music at 100%, and I think the music for the lobby changed. So I was like, yo, this is cool. I like these little changes.
Apparently 25 variations for each gun. You know what I mean?
Nice.
So many different looks. I mean, it wouldn't have made sense for it to be sort of predetermined once you bought the weapon and it would never change. But I kind of like that idea. It's fun. You know, I got the Sentinel collection because I think it's one of my favorites, to be honest with you. I spent too much money on skins, though. No, I think I only got, I think I only bought the Phantom and Vandal. I didn't get the whole pack because I didn't really dive with the knife, but... Anyway,
now I want to know knife. 25 attachments, butterfly knife. Is the pack going to be more expensive? I don't know.
Nah,
I wouldn't even notice it because I'm still buying it.
The skins aren't really animated like the other ones, right? Well, actually, I don't know what the rating. Who fucking cares? Anyway,
You are with the skins consultant right here,
dude. I simp for cosmetics in games. It's a problem. Like, this is fucking
same.
Yeah. Fuck. That's where all my money goes. So 7,100 VP is what it's going to cost. All right,
not bad.
On the esports topic, so Riot announced the format for Masters Berlin, and then promptly changed it. So initially, it was going to be four groups of four with four teams, one team from each group advancing. Which is, I'm sorry, don't know who the fuck came up with that idea in the first place. It's just. I'm not really sure how they can sort of conceive of that being like a good thing. Like the point of having groups is so more than one team advances from a group, like your top two teams. Otherwise, what the fuck is the point of having group play? Just make it a fucking, I don't know, single Elim tournament from the very beginning. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Actually, if I could try to explain that, and I'll ask Danny to pull out my really, really nice picture, that I just did before the show with Paint. Because I fully believe that the reason why we had this format is because of production timelines. If you look at this right now, it's only the 10th to the 19th. So then basically, I'll show it after once we have the brackets. Yeah, there you go. So look at this.
What is this?
Let me
dog shit. I can't even read this. Why have you done this?
Everybody in chat will understand. So if you look at everything, like all these circles are matches, right? So if you're going with the original format, this is one group. So let's say this is group A. So every single day you would have three matches being played during group. So if you look at number one and number two, that means that you have 2 days to cover each group, right? And then the single winning team will move on into playoff, right? So if you look at all four groups that needs to be played, then it's going to take 8 days, right? For so we could cover every single match. That means
that... off the screen.
Yeah.
Get this off the screen.
Okay.
I'd rather watch Tenet, to be honest.
Okay, so I'll explain it right now. So then technically at this point is you need 4 days to go through all the matches, right? Or 8 days, sorry, to go all through all the four groups, which then means you only have two more days to do playoffs, which is semifinals on 2 days, and you have grand finals best of five on the last day. That's how I see it, that you fit this into a 10-day tournament, right? But now that you have this new format that's going to come out, there you go, you see it here. So then semifinals would be day number 9, and then the grand finals day number 10. Now with this new format is that you'll still have the same amount of days in terms of group play coverage, right? So it's still going to take you 8 days. But now that you're actually adding quarterfinals into the playoffs, then technically you need like two more days for coverage if you want to cover every single quarterfinal matchup, right? That's why I think it was like the scheduling issue. So my bigger question now then comes to, are there going to be matches coming Berlin that will not be covered come playoffs, or how do you play those and how do you fit that in the schedule?
Right? Potentially, but you can't. So let me just make something clear. Riot didn't change the rules because Tyler fucking Erzberger tweeted about it.
Can you imagine?
Let me just make that.
Holy shit, we'd be down the shit so fast.
The least intimidating person I've ever encountered in my, you know, 29 years on this earth. Oh. But I think it's a cogent point, you know, having now the change is to have two teams, as fans put it out. I mean, I'd have an easier time understanding the fucking plot of One Piece than that graphic. Price on the bike. So obviously, based on player and fan feedback, the Berlin knockout stage will pivot to an 8-team single elimination bracket and remove the final match of group play. So what I guess it's, that's fine. Look, you take two teams from each group, you put them in, it's literally GSL. Yep. It's literally GSL.
Exactly.
Which I think Tyler pointed out there. Yeah, I'm fucking 29, bitches. Y'all mad in the chat?
Look,
let's go.
The most built 29-year-old I know.
And I'm not mad. I love this format. I love the fact that we went to GSL. I love the fact that Riot listened to the community. I love that the community actually pushed for this right now, too. Now, I just want to know, how are we going to be able to cover all these matches now going into the playoffs?
Can you imagine if Riot did this about other stuff as well? Like, just as a joke, like, talent of, like, we've heard your feedback, we're bringing in DDK, we're taking out fucking... I don't know. I don't want to name anybody. Okay, we're taking out Riot Central because you all feedback it that he's an absolute wop. So we've taken that feedback on board. Yeah. Just imagine if they did something like that. That feels on point of just, we heard your feedback. He's no longer involved in the event.
I think that Riot's apparent pliability it's probably got a lot more to do with the fact that this is really a dress rehearsal year for them, and they're really just trying to find what works. So I think they're probably less invested in these details than like an LCS, for example, who've been running for years and years now would be, and they're more flexible. I would probably suggest that people should not expect this degree of flexibility to persist into a potential league or franchising era from this. I think it's great while it's there. I do think that changing the tournament format this close is hard to do. So there's legwork involved on their end. But, you know, obviously there's people that they trust that have sort of gone, hey, this is not a great format, and they fix it, which is great. I just, having been on the inside of these situations, I've kind of seen that, like, sometimes these things are just locked in and cannot be changed at all, and that you just have to be okay with that. I'm glad that they can do that. And I think it really helps their popularity. But it's a luxury. I think this is a luxury that, you know, less established leagues and programs have because of their very nature, right? They're less tethered to ideas and there's less stakeholders and all this bullshit. So, yeah, I just don't know if it'll be like that forever, but it's great that they've changed it now. I wasn't even backlash about it. It was just... you know, people like, this isn't very good, so change it. I don't know if they had to change it to GSL style, because like Vance was saying, like there's a set number of days that they're doing the show for. So they had to find a format that fit inside that. And scheduling is difficult.
It's insane.
Yeah. 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 Whether it's for like a 2 week event or like a 12 week league is hard.
Yeah. Like
at the end of the day,
Yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say real quick. Yeah. Like Waters was just saying in chat, like, why don't you just spend another 50K for another day in a tournament? But it stems more than that, right? It's like, it's scheduling on other events that can happen on different days at the venues. It's now cost of production for an extra day. It's cost for talent for an extra day. It's cost of hotels an extra day. It's like there's so much cost involved to just add and many factors just to add one day. So
one day can make or break the budget as
exactly.
well for an event like this.
And it's months of planning. It's months of planning. You can't just change it last minute, unfortunately, at that point.
Yeah, it's just putting on an event, I think, at this point. This year, especially if they can just stick the middle finger up at Counter-Strike and just be like, hey, we can change stuff. We can listen to our community, you absolute fools. But yeah, like, I think going into it is just, I don't know what my expectations are for, like, Masters Berlin as a spectator, because it could be just, you know, obviously during COVID, there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of technical issues as well with Reykjavik, with hour-long technical pauses and stuff. And so, I think...
Well, they also took shots. They took shots at every other league that was going to try and run events in the LCS announcements. Like, we don't need to run these dangerous events to, you know, put out a competitive product. Like, okay, well then, you know, I don't expect to see you, you know, be too precious about an event that might have to be cancelled, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, they already kind of... The communications from Riot have already kind of sort of set a standard where they're putting everyone's safety first and they want you to know about it. So
yeah, and Cryptic just told me here, apparently from the last paragraph or the third paragraph over the post, it says that they will play the first quarterfinal of last day of groups, right? So I'm going to read it real quick here. The only additional requirement is that the knockout stage schedule will be set after the draw. So if they play the first one there, then that means... the eighth day technically could be four BO3s, and then everything else goes back into schedule. But still, we'll figure it out when Berlin comes. Okay. Because as I was going to say, it's another extra day of BO3s with quarterfinals as well. So it's like 11 days minimum now.
Yeah.
Let's pivot to talk about LCQ, because there was an announcement for that. Obviously, a lot of teams wondering about LCQ, like TSM, for example. So here it is. So it kicks off on October the 12th and runs through the 17th. It's an invite-only 10-team LAN double elimination tournament with a winner will walk away with the ticket directly to Champions. So Sentinels won't be participating because they already have their ticket booked, as do Crew, I think. They're the only two teams that are locked in. You need circuit points. So it's like 2nd through 11th, I guess, in circuit points gets to compete. And then... it's 8 teams, right? Plus 2 from Oceania randomly, which is...
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. So top 8 teams in North America, and obviously this was already mentioned, is that Oceania is getting sort of folded into NA a little bit. But I mean, I don't know what the level of competition is over there now with Sonics departing. I think like Order is a pretty solid team out there. There are a few, but I don't know. Either way, they'll have a chance so to compete for a spot in Champions. So Oceania might actually get to compete there. But we're talking, you know, depending on how Berlin goes, right? Because I think... is this chopped off? I think this is chopped off, right? Because I'm pretty sure that like Envy and 100 Thieves can qualify for a champ. Oh, yeah, no, sorry. I think they can qualify for a champion spot.
Yeah, it's
sure.
top two. Mm-hmm. Sentinels can. So it's a question of realistically who does better out of Envy or 100 Thieves. But correct. Obviously, 100 Thieves have to do 25 points better than Envy. But Hegemon, FaZe Clan, Xset, Cloud9, they're all in. And the only big one is that if Sentinels, Envy, or 100 Thieves win Berlin, TSM would be a team that would inherit a qualifying spot for Last Chance Qualifiers. But how likely is that? Hard to say, but yeah. See you next year, TSM, is what it says, if anybody else wins. Which
I mean, highly likely, because it's Sentinels that's going to win.
Nah, mate.
Right, well, I mean, yeah.
Supermassive Blaze are just going to keep like, they're going to just run at them in the studio, just across the stage. They're just going to... get in their faces.
I know. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't know. Everyone seems to bounce off Sentinels when it comes to land play. So
can we just say how hype this is going to be, though? Like the amount of times that we've been talking about, oh, NA teams, or just region teams trying to figure out who's like the best teams in the regions. And now we finally get like an NA regional, EMEA regional qualifier, but on LAN this time too. Like, this is going to change a lot of things, a lot of factors as well. I'm looking forward to it, which is why like my copium continues to be very high for TSM, and why I want NA to actually win Berlin, because
here's what happens. If EU or any other team wins in Berlin, it's a double blow, because first of all, NA don't win in Berlin.
Correct.
And then TSM, who accounts for, like, I don't know, 45% of the lowest common denominator of Valorant fans in NA, also won't have their team in LCQ.
So. Exactly. So to see TSM potentially on LAN, based on what will happen in Berlin, is going to be fucking sick. So that's why I'm putting all my stonks into NA, Envy, 100 Thieves, and Sentinels to win this, so that we could see TSM on LAN.
No, I believe in my Kankas and comrades from Turkey and CIS to come through.
Yeah, I mean, you fucking have to, because there's no actual EU teams representing. Get fucked.
Yeah.
Can we?
Well, there is.
That's true. There is actually. You guys have four slots, so let's transition here to talking about EMEA. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the VCT EMEA. We obviously only got to cover half of it last week, as it was still going at the time. And to help us with that, we'll bring it back onto the show. It's Tom Beers. Welcome back, bro.
Hello. I've just realized we're actually allowed two bald people on the desk at the same time, because me and Ryan never get to work together. So
yeah. I'm happy that global it's finally been allowed.
Yeah, global, I don't know. Like, this show's not diverse enough, really. It's like, what? Three white guys, two bald guys, by the way.
Asian guy on the side. He's not in the middle anywhere.
Yeah, you're not even in the middle.
And no, you have two guys called Mitch normally. Imagine that's even worse.
Yeah, that's kind of fucked up, really. I mean, we're working on it. Don't worry. We've been in touch. Riot have reached out to us, of course, and had very specific stipulations about how the show should look. We'll get right on that. I mean, hey, at least we haven't had to contract anyone to do this show and then cancel them at the last minute and still have to pay them out because they weren't really fitting with the image of the show we wanted to put on. That would have been tough. Anyway, let's talk about VCT EMEA. We have, obviously, we now have our teams decided that are going to Berlin. We knew that Ascend and Supermassive Blaze were going to go through. But we had a lot of this lower bracket to be decided here. I mean, pretty insane stuff here. Obviously, Gambit in this lower bracket are quite incredible here. And some heartbreak, I think, for, you know, teams like Liquid and Giants.
I don't know. I would say that Giants, for me, were the biggest surprise even still. Like, even after how well they'd done in the previous stage, I expected them to lose to Guild. And then I expected Guild to lose to G2. So other than that, it kind of went according to plan. I think the other one you'll probably want to bring up is the likes of Liquid. And again, I kind of expected that eventually they'd have to play either Ascend or Gambit, and I didn't think they would win that match. I guess it was mainly the fact that they lost to Na'Vi at the beginning, which kind of left them in a horrible spot where they had to beat someone, well, who should be going.
I think Giants certainly got to a point where it's just, I had expectations on them to qualify, but anything else was a bonus. Even if they bottomed out the event, it's kind of like they've done what feels like the impossible, considering they're such a new, fresh team, that it wouldn't have bothered me at all. So the fact that they got that far and they didn't really have a close series against G2 to qualify, let's be honest, was still nice to watch. And it was an even bigger surprise to see that Giants signed David P and...
What is it with David P that
he always gets like trialing on a team, then like gets real big results for them, and it still takes like ages for him to get signed. Same thing happened.
Well, I think the question for me is like, did Giants just pull out of like Valorant full stop? Like, because they're not part of VCT. We're not going to see them in the main circuit until 2022 now. Like, they're not in last chance qualifiers. So it might have just been that they didn't want to sign him because they were like, oh, we might just sack everybody and just drop out and then come back in January of next year, right, for the next circuit, whatever that would be. So
they literally signed him on qualification day. That was the weirdest. Like, you wait 1 day, and then you know if they're actually going to be playing for the rest of the year. And instead, you sign him on the day he gets eliminated, and now you kind of go,
long-term view. It has to be, because we're looking well into next year, then, if you're Giants and you're making this signing. How the fuck? I mean, that's kind of wild. How do you know? What's it? Do we know what the term of his contract is?
No clue.
It is odd that you actually choose to sign someone now in for what is going to be a relatively lengthy offseason.
Especially with all the shuffles. I think that's the crazy thing about it. Like, you look at some of the players that are currently being put on the market, like FPX players are now like being dropped out. You're seeing shuffles of OG superstars like being dropped. And you've got to sort of have those thoughts in your mind of whether you're a Giants or whether you're anyone. You go, well, would it have been better to wait even just a week and just see what happened with everybody else and then go, okay, maybe we could have had a slightly better thing. Or even just said to him, like, you win this game, you're signed. Because I feel like that's like the greatest motivation. Like, it's a lot of pressure at the same time, but just imagine if he did it. That would have been the best day of his life.
Yeah.
I wonder if because they've got designs on competing in like what LVP stuff, maybe? Like, maybe. I know, like, at least in that region, like, there's a lot of tournaments, but it's, I always felt like it was the same sort of ilk as your Nerd Street game as championships, right? Like, it's not, it's not exactly high flying stuff, but maybe Giants want to be a fixture still regionally in that regard. It's just, I don't know, it's very odd. But I mean, the Giants look like they've run out of fairy dust, I suppose, towards the end here. Such a dream run, but they eventually sort of get ground out here by G2 in three, in fairness. Giants actually end up winning this first map, but
last two.
That's the last we really see of them. They just fall off.
I don't know. I don't know if they fell off or if they just reached the peak. I think that was the thing. Like, peak G2, in my mind, was always going to beat them. As said, I expected Guild to beat them as well. Like, I think that they've surprised us all the way through this tournament, but a G2 squad that has basically just built a super team. As said, I said it on the cast itself, if somehow Giants had beaten that game, like, you almost have to start looking at the squad that they've got and go, well, is this even worth keeping anymore? Because you've got G2 who've basically bought out players from the best teams in the world or the best teams in Europe. If they then went on to get eliminated by Giants, who, as you almost highlighted a moment ago, were basically just reject players who people didn't necessarily want to sign and have somehow pulled together this roster that almost managed to qualify, like, you're at two very different ends of the scale. And considering it came down as a 2-1, it's a little bit scary for G2 considering how much they were expected to achieve.
I do think for Giants, though, it's like, I just think that well-structured teams just seem to fall to G2. Like, it's their kryptonite, I'd say. Like, G2 is so good against teams that play such a set style and a set way of playing. But, like, Giants were never expected to do that well. Honestly, I think there's the teams that are in last chance qualifiers that should count their lucky stars that they're still involved, like Guild especially. Like, they need to get their shit in order because people expect more from them. And I also think, like, going into last chance qualifiers, you've got teams like Fubalist who have done nothing for two of the three stages. The only reason why they're in it is because they won the first Masters, which was just purely out of the Turkish region. So, like, last chance qualifiers is going to be really interesting for us because you've got some teams that have sort of coming. No matter what, Supermassive, Blaze, and G2 are going to be in the last chance qualifiers. And if you're like Guild and any of the other teams that have sort of sat there and kind of gone, done consistently well across all of the stages, you need to get your shit in order or teams are just going to overtake you. And it's a real shame that Giants didn't make it because I think they're more deserving of a last chance qualify spot than a team like Fubalist, let's be honest. And Oxygen as well, maybe.
Yeah, it's pretty devastating that their chance to accrue circuit points really only there once you can, you know, get into Masters or, you know, get real deep in the sort of VCT Challenger stuff here. As it stands, though, I mean, Giants look like they are, to some degree, committed at least to David P. So there's definitely a sense that they still want to be a fixture in whatever off season we end up getting. Again, like, there's been talk right. Yeah. So, I mean, there's been talk almost of like maybe a Blast or someone else trying to, you know, get some competition going in that off season.
It was a streamer event last time, though, other than when they actually did the qualification for like First Strike. So, The last thing they did was much more of like a fun, like less competitive thing. So it depends if it's like, because I think they did a couple of like Twitch invitationals, which had very, very little to do with actual competitive teams. So it depends if that's what they're going for when they come back to Valorant and it's more of a white label thing, or if it's going to be like, hey, we're running our own competitive event in between everything else that's going on. Because that's going to be a little bit tougher because at least the top teams might just not play it at all, at least the ones that qualify.
Yeah. Are there stipulations in EU about like the tier of tournament you're allowed to compete in based on like what you've achieved in VCT?
There was some weird one, wasn't there? There was like the French tournament, I forgot what it's called. Like that had some weird stipulation on who could attend. It was like only French teams or teams that qualified for Masters 1 or some shit. It was really odd.
Because Alliance played one, didn't they? And they played in one of those tournaments and it was like, oh yeah, you have to be a French team, except this one who's not French, but for some reason they count. It's like, oh, that's cool. That's a really great rule set. Love that one.
And then you've got in NA, it's like, yeah, I mean, if you have a Mexican player in your roster, you'll just get disqualified midway through the tournament, even though we're allowing him to play. No worries. All right, let's talk about one of the most exciting games from that lower bracket. It's Gambit up against Team Liquid. My God. You know, I think Ryan, your pick'ems, I think you had Gambit sort of winning out here.
You're talking about Ryan's pick'ems? Number one pick'em in the world, mate. Number one in the world. My pick'ems.
Yeah, but everybody was like, I don't know, smoking crack on this one to not predict that Gambit were going to do this well. One of the things about Gambit that I said, because Platchat did their own, which, you know, that as it is, but like one of the things that I said is like Gambit are a team that are gonna lose that first game against Ascend. They're gonna qualify, and then once they've qualified, they're gonna beat every single other team that's qualified, because that's just Gambit. Gambit are the best team in the world in scrims. Officials, they kind of bottle it, and they bottled so many like 5v2s, 5v3s. Their ability to close out rounds is awful, and it was looking really rough in this Team Liquid game initially, and then we started to slowly see what makes this team scary. And I think for players, you can highlight like Nats, who's extraordinary, Shados had his moments, but I think the biggest step up in quality came from the IGL himself, Redgar. He had an insane tournament and he got better as it went on.
I would almost put Shados in that bracket as well. I think if you look at the difference between his level of play before they qualified and after they qualified, like after they qualified, he won multiple 1v4, like 1v5, like some of the most ridiculous plays I've seen in my entirety in Valorant. And before that, he was good, but it was almost just like, oh, the pressure's been lifted, I'm now the best player in the server. Whereas if I look at Nats was god tier the whole tournament, like easily the tournament MVP. I don't even think it was close. And the fact that if it wasn't for him, I don't think they qualify. Like, he had so many just individual plays that we were just losing our fucking minds almost all the way through. So he's been my favorite player for months, and I'm so happy to see that. Like, I think even if you just look at, like, Twitter followers, I think he's gained, like, 10K in, like, a week. Like, people have just gone, oh, shit, this guy's nuts. Let's look at him now.
What on earth happened on this bind map here? Because Liquid win the pistol next to, and that is that. Absolutely rolled and smoked on this map.
I think it's just always like Gambit's defensive side is just nuts. Like it genuinely is. Like firstly, you've got Nats and all of his setups. Wherever he's playing, he just seems to be unbelievably strong. Like I think that one of the things that everybody's really excited for now is him facing off against Dapper to just see like who's going to take that crown, because that's it. Like I don't really put many players anywhere near that bracket at all. But that's the thing. I feel like if you maybe started on the opposite side of the map, we could have seen a completely different game, because Gambit's attacks have been really questionable. Like they've taken so many incredibly strong defensive halves, and then they go over to the attack side and get like two rounds. Like it happened the first time they played Ascend on this map. Like they looked really good, switch sides, one round for the rest of the game.
I think as well, like Bind was a nice change of pace for Gambit, who are typically a super passive, retake heavy team on the defense. Yeah. Seeing him play up against Ascend, where Ascend are like peeking around corners, and there's like Shados there that's like, surprise, bitch, just sort of wide swings everywhere. Like Ascend were clearly like, what are these guys doing? It's just their attacking side that sucks, but at least we saw a different way in a different style from Gambit that we typically expect. And I think one of the impressive things for me about Nats is he's a god tier Cypher, but also his Viper was insanely consistent. Yeah. Like I'm pretty sure ACS, if you compare the two, they're only a couple of numbers different. I'll actually double check
this
that
map
real quick.
Broke me. This map absolutely broke me. The fact like in OT, Gambit should have closed it out like three times. And it was just like, I think it was Link just came in with one of the most ridiculous retakes I've ever seen, which was just like him wall banging everybody as he walked into the A site and just hitting.
Flicking
I think
everyone.
He one tap headshot someone through a wall. And it was just like, this is the stupidest retake I think I've ever seen. And somehow they managed to close it out. And then still Gambit, like, I don't want to say they weren't phased, but it, like, this, my favorite pastime now is half the time when I'm not watching the game, I'm just watching Nats's reaction. Like, even when they qualified and won the entire series, he sat there while the rest of the team jumped up. He was just like, yep, cool.
He was ill. He was sick.
I think, like, he's my favorite player probably, but I also think he might be a psychopath because he just seems to have no reaction to anything. He's like, yes, I got good kills. We win game. Okay, when we go to Berlin now, like, that's it.
They're the most wholesome guys as well. Like, Redger messaged me the other day. The best part is he messaged me originally saying, hey, comrade, which is the biggest compliment. I want to frame it. I want to frame the screenshot because I sent it to Yinsu and it's like, we've made it. We've made it. But it's he would literally be like, oh, like, I talk about the game and he's like, oh, I hope you liked our Haven and stuff. And it's like, liked it? You guys are insane. But, like, one thing I'll say about Nats is...
I did not like
it. Nats' cipher, like, ACS, was 235 and his Viper was 237. Like, what the fuck? Like, two ACS difference in two different agents? Because usually for a role like a Sentinel, it's like they're insane on Killjoy, but they can't play Cypher or their Viper isn't up to par. Mm. So the fact that he's that good across different agents
he's
on various maps
it as well.
Yeah,
like, picking up the poison orb as he like moves through positions and using it to fade out the smoke to try and find kills. Like, people started stealing that from him. And it's just like, he did this with, like, a lot of people started copying the way he was using the cams as well, where he would just pop them at the beginning of the round and watch you as you walk through. And you'd see people going around angles, just like going through here. And he's going, right, there's two, three, there's four. I'm not going to tag any of them because that will give my cam away. And then after like 30 seconds, someone looks up and goes,
Big Brother's been watching this whole time.
He also put like a camera on the bomb. On a clutch.
That was brilliant.
And it was like, was it against the Sen? They're like, where's the camera? And the camera's literally like attached to the spike looking up like, come on. It almost feels like we've gone back to some of the beta cams of just putting them in places where they're just really awkward
to
see.
Yeah, it's like flare jeans being in fashion again. This is how fucking metas go, guys.
Yeah. It's like it was considered so dumb that no one would do it, so then it's meta again because... one's doing this, so I'll do it because no one will expect it. And then everybody expects it, so you do something else again. It'll keep rotating until the end of time. Or until someone breaks the cam completely, puts it out of the map, and gets themselves disqualified. Not that anyone would do that, right?
No, never. So G2 and Gambit now, we know that they're advancing, which is great. There's an EMEA team. Obviously, that's going to be competing, which is great to see. G2 then play against Gambit. So here's the silly part of the tournament where, you know, you are playing for seedings for a little bit. G2 play against Gambit, which I think was a match that, you know, everyone just wanted to see for interest's sake, but the stakes are maybe not quite ironclad at this point here. It's a weird series. It's really back and forth, but this last map is super hype, really close. There's a spike plant with like 0.001 seconds here at overtime. To keep the game going. Quite ridiculous here.
It was ridiculous from start to finish. I still remember on map one, Chronicle was basically just, I think he was using the Odin the whole map and was just retaking with an Odin pretty much all the way through. Like, and he's another one where it's like, you talk about these players as almost if they're part of the depth of the team. Like, you're going like, oh, this guy is like the support player. And then you look at Gambit and you realize then they're just not support players at all. They're all just ridiculous. It reminds me very much of like the Gambit CSGO team, where you'll ask them who's the best player and it's always different to what everyone at home thinks is the best player. It's just that realistically, someone like Chronicle a lot of the time takes the shit roles or the shit positions, and because of it he just seems to still thrive to a degree, but he'll never get the same credit as someone like Defu, who's dashing into a smoke and headshotting someone at the beginning of the round.
Chronicle taking like an Odin is not a bad thing, right?
You realize Mitch isn't here, right? You don't have to say that anymore.
Yeah.
The Odin fanboy is gone. He's not going
to But even just Vanity before was saying how like Odin on Bind was like ridiculous. So maybe Chronicle's onto something.
Oh, I think I mean, Ascent is quite common though, isn't it? Like Ascent, loads of people sure. just yeah. wallbang sure. the same B site thing. But he was just it was the retakes. That was what he seemed to just line up someone every single time so that they couldn't play Under Heaven anymore. And it just it got to the point where it looked like G2 were just like, how the fuck do we play against this stupid Odin? And it always just ended up going very wrong.
Playing like yeah yeah, it, playing as an Odin makes you rethink about your post plant. Positioning
yeah.
as
yeah.
like attackers, because you could just get fucking lasered out of nowhere, especially if you're playing it in hell, for example, right? Someone above you just like beams you down with the Omen, it's the Odin, excuse me. And also like through now the Radiant box, this might be because the Radiant boxes are more penetrable as well now yeah. instead of for just certain parts of them. So mm-hmm. that might just be, yeah, this part went down, yeah, with like 0.01 seconds in the round.
Yeah.
Pretty Didn't insane. The Chronicle say that it wasn't, it was like a UI bug and he had like 0.75 seconds left or something. Because clearly from the picture, he doesn't look phased at all.
That is one of the things where like sometimes the UI is a little bit ahead. Mm. That has happened a few times, like where you'll see round win and the round hadn't ended yet.
Also yeah, with yeah. like, yeah, there's been sync problems with like the HUD health bars and stuff like that as well. Sometimes yeah. been really out of whack because there's input so lag as well. That. Because you are running this data out of the API through like a bunch of processing. So, I mean, it could happen. I feel like when it comes to timers, though, you probably need to be pretty careful about that. I don't know how you really... I actually have no idea how this integration works, though. Either way, that is Gambit went out against G2. It's real close, that last map. Just kind of a wacky series, because I think the first two maps aren't particularly close either way, right? Like, G2 get three rounds.
Yeah,
on the same.
They Gambit's swing pretty hard, yeah.
On, yeah, on Icebox. So, which is fine. You kind of expect that at this stage. And we get a final between Gambit and Supermassive. I don't know, man. I really knew nothing about this Supermassive team outside of the fact that they had Pora and Russ on this team that I knew. But we get four maps in the final here. You called it, Ryan. But, like, I don't know. It's a 13-1 in map number one. And then, like, Bind and Haven is, like, Supermassive get, like, eight rounds across both maps. Like, it seems
13-1.
Like a troll.
13-1. On Gambit's best map.
Yeah.
That was what I was like, because I was sat there like, I knew before that I would finish first in the pick'em, which I was like, okay, that should never happen. Like, that should never happen that I've managed to fluke my way through all of this bullshit and somehow end up there. But I was like, okay, but Gambit need to win. And then I look at this map and I'm like, fucked. All right, let's never tweet about it again. Let's delete that one and just pretend it never happened. And then they somehow managed to put, because as said, like going into this, this was their best map. I think they maybe lost it once. And other than that, they even destroyed Ascend on it the first time they played it. Like, had a really good game, incredible defensive side, and they got obliterated. Like, yeah. Izzy was having an absolute field day, just running around, destroying anyone that came into his path. And I will say, like, one of the things, because obviously we all watch demos. I've heard you guys say this a million times on this show.
Some real serial VOD watchers out here.
I watched some of Supermassive Blaze against the Turkish opposition, and in my mind I was like, well, Izzy won't get away with that versus EU teams. He got away with it more. Like, it genuinely he got away with it way more versus like teams in EU than he did versus the Turkish teams. Like, just the ability to just almost have, like, I genuinely think that man was born without fear. Like, I think it's almost like the Yumpy mentality where he goes, I just look at the scoreboard and I don't give a shit what the number says, because Izzy will peak anything, but he gets away with it. And I think that the team also managed to do very well to facilitate him. Like, you have players like Pora, who I genuinely think it's like a nuke going off and like a cockroach surviving just in this little corner of the ground. Like, that man is unkillable. So it just has such a good balance within their squad that I think they're going to be really, really tough to beat when it comes around to Masters, because they're not going to fear any opponent, even if it is someone like Sentinels.
Yeah. Brave as well is a pretty interesting story. Like, 17-year-old player, and he's possibly the best controller player, I think, in the region at this point. Like, he doesn't have to IGL, and I think the IGL in part of Supermassive Blaze is my biggest concern, just because Pora is typically quite a quiet guy, as far as I know. And it's not only IGLing, but IGLing as a sentinel. Like, you're not really part of the picture here. Like, you're off doing your own thing. Like, even now, it's you got like a follow-up, and if you're poor in this situation, you need to make calls whilst also not really being part of the fight. You've got your own shit to focus on. So I think the RGL in this tournament has been super standout. Redgar's been impressive. Yeah. Pora's come up and looked well. Bone Cold, considering Cold Dementor went to G2, he stood up to be counted. It's a really nice look for the leaders. It's a shame that we don't really have like Boaster and Fnatic in that mix, but I feel now we're starting to find captains in the region, and they're the biggest difference, because I think mental's the biggest difference for this region more than anything. We have the abilities, the utility, and the ways that teams play together, but we need leaders in the server when you're down 11-1 at the half. Because we saw a lot of comebacks with scorelines like that. It's pretty nuts.
Do you guys think that EMEA is sending their best representatives possible? Yeah.
I would have liked
to see Fnatic there still. I know that that might just be going back off what happened last time, but I think based on how they prepare for tournaments, I think they're always going to be deadly. And I think it's always like some of the earlier stages or coming up against teams that know them very well is where they'll sometimes slip. Like, they were one of the teams that I think were surprised by how good Giants actually were, because people had no data on Giants. Whereas if you go into a Masters event, well, you're going to give Boaster and Mini every single piece of data they need. Like, there's only so much the teams are going to adapt. I think especially teams coming from other regions as well, like a lot of the time you will see teams just stick to what they know. So I think that's why Fnatic was so good. And even though, like, obviously Sentinels, they didn't lose a map, it's hard to like disrespect them as a team. Fnatic were the only one who even really took them close. And I take that in my eyes, considering how like new that team was still going into that tournament. I still think that they would have been very, very scary going into the Masters.
Right, they were still fresh with Gurkha and Magnum, of course.
Yeah, and that's why I think like them losing actually benefits them more in the long run, because, you know, the good thing about it is that Fnatic haven't changed anything up, which, you know, I'm thankful for, because I think it would have been a massive mistake to make any changes.
Maybe premature, at this point.
Boaster is the kind of guy to take that incredibly personally. And so I do think that Fnatic are going to come back stronger. I'd say the same for Liquid. Like, I thought Liquid has been dog this stage, but the way that they played once they went down to the loser's bracket was the team Liquid that qualified for EMEA. Yeah, and it's like, it took the team that ended up winning the whole tournament, and I think with Gambit, the team that's going to place the highest out of EMEA, that's probably my safe bet. It took them to overtime in that last map, on a map that is incredibly cruel for punishing fundamentals with Icebox. And they had so much going for them. I think Yampi was a bit disappointing, sure, but he has to grow as a player. And he's nothing makes you grow more than losing a match that closely and not qualifying for an international event, which, frankly, you should have been the first name on. So like, I think Liquid and Fnatic come back stronger. It's just how they do in last chance qualifiers, which, as I said before, is looking to be incredibly spicy.
Yeah, I mean, the shift of balance and power in a region usually just serves to make it better overall, so I wouldn't be too worried about that. EMEA still sends really strong delegates. So let's have a look at all the teams qualified for Berlin. We have literally fucking all of them here. So Envy, Hunter Thieves, we've got Sentinels in there, of course, Keedstars and Crew. I think notably there, you got F4Q and Vision Strikers. I know that...
Crazy most notable one is Bren.
Yeah, Bren. It was Bren Esports, right?
Bren from Overwatch has his own team, and they're going to Berlin.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, God. It's killing me. You know, that team's been quite a fixture, though, in the SEA. So, I mean,
me and Tom have casted them. Me and Tom have casted both these teams, I'm pretty sure.
I think a while ago. I don't even know.
I don't even think they're the same players. And I think we've been scarred from casting Southeast Asia, like 6 a.m. call times, weird setups like via Discord and stuff, and just best of one shit shows.
Best of one, same execution run 13 rounds in a row and make me want to gouge my
eyes. I like still remember five times in a row. Randomized maps, and it was split like four times in a row.
Yeah, that was bad. Anything that has randomized maps ever is a dreadful tournament format and should never be run ever again.
Randomized, brilliant. Obviously, Havana Liberty were there as well. Havana Liberty? I don't fucking know. And Zeta Division, they're the ones with the very intimidating
photos. I'm excited for them.
Photos.
I'm excited for Zeta Division.
My favorite joke that I made from doing EMEA was, we have Havan that play Haven, we have Ascent that play Ascent. I hope that the new map's called like Gombit or something like that, or like Upan Bassi plays or something. Yeah, Yinsu enjoyed it, and that's why I have a piece of paper that says pain.
Come out better the first time somehow. All right, That's all we got for the show today. Tom, thanks for coming on the show, man. Appreciate it. Again, 2 weeks in a row, man. Good to get some of your insight on craziness in EMEA. Ryan, you're okay.
Yeah, I'm less happy about Tom being here, but I guess it makes sense.
Is that why the lighting slowly got darker in the room? As you become sadder like and sadder.
This fucking eSports setup is what's going on. Like, I could turn off this light and then you can really get the full...
I would hope that there'd be a little bit of light coming off the candles, though, right? With the cake on the table and everything.
Yeah. Where's the fucking set myself on fire after this as well? So.
wait. As long as someone's there to blow out, Ryan, you know what I mean? You gotta enjoy yourself a little bit, mate. Vince! Yeah.
What's going to happen is it's going to get to my birthday and nobody's going to give a shit. That's what's going to happen. It's going to get to the 20th of December.
Why did you
nobody's going to give a shit.
Yeah, I mean... Because no, it'll be like the boy who cried wolf, isn't it? Like, no one's really believe that.
Mitch is like, hold on, haven't you had your birthday already? You're like,
yeah.
Do you know what's funny? Mitch wished you a happy birthday on my birthday and not me. do you know how brutal that is? My own duo.
Unreal. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't pull any punches.
Committed to the cause.
Holy shit, he's in
so
there.
So good.
Vince, good to have you on again, man. What's coming up
Thanks
for you?
For having
what are you
me.
Doing?
Nothing much, man. I'm just going to fight this little cold and then back to the gym grind and then maybe watch some VODs. Who knows?
Yeah. You know what? Maybe you probably should. Yeah, you want to maintain that that Valorant talent status. You best get grinded. Hey, guys. In all seriousness, thanks for joining us. Big shout out to Vanity for coming on the show again as well. Yeah. Guy's busy. I'm sure there's a lot coming up, even if he has no idea what's coming up for his team. I'm sure they'll be put to work. So big shout out to him. Thank you as well to his community for joining us here on the podcast.
Yes,
they really great to have them along. We're back next week, ladies and gentlemen. We're building a little bit of that suspense heading into Berlin. And of course, we'll be following all the developments that happen in Valorant, not only in EU and NA, but also around the world. So tune in next week, 11 a.m. PT. Until then, have a good week. We'll see you for more Valoranting next time.